She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Saturday. You are indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And remember our tagline, we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And think about that. Thanks so much for joining us today. Our show is sponsored by Chapman Tucson. Please visit them at chapmantucson.com if you're looking for some of the most fuel-efficient cars in the industry. Thank you, Chapman, for your support of Mrs. Green's World. Another exciting show today. Our in-studio guest is Mike Baruch. Did I say it right? I did, Mike. From Tucson Electric Power Company, he's been a guest on our show many times, and I always look forward to it. And our featured guest, which only means the longer part of the show, is Patty Goldman, the Vice President of Litigation for Earth Justice. And their tagline cracked me up. It's because the earth needs a good lawyer. And it cracked me up in a great way. They are the world's first and largest nonprofit environmental law firm. And I'm not sure I connected all the dots of a law firm being nonprofit, but they are earthjustice.org. We're very pleased to have both of you on the show today. Please don't forget to connect with me on Facebook and Twitter or to email me info@mrsgreensworld.com if you have questions about the show today or something that you think I might be able to help you with. So let's go on to the show. And Mike, glad you're here.
It is so great to be here, and it's amazing to be here in your studio. I think this is the first time I've been into your new home studio. It's absolutely fantastic. And I'm imagining that we're saving energy right now by doing this from your home versus in a larger commercial studio.
It's very exciting to me. Very exciting. And thank you for saying that. I feel, you know, it's like you and I were talking off air. It's an early adopter kind of thing to go to the internet. Things are working out really well. And I appreciate Tucson Electric Power's support of that vision and dream. And it's working and it's growing and we're getting the message out. So that makes me excited.
It is great to have you in the community and great to have you reaching out to so many people over the internet. I appreciate you having me on today because spring is just around the corner, believe it or not, for those of us living in Tucson. And
believe that? I mean, there are places where they are getting dumped on for snow, and we're sitting here, and it's postcard weather. It's Tucson Chamber of Commerce weather.
That it is. And, you know, come March, people are going to be starting to think about having their air conditioners tuned up. And so I wanted to make sure everybody knew that we have a great family of incentives and rebates available.
You really do. Lots of stuff.
We do. And this year, you know, we have a program, Bright Save Home program. We've been running it for a year now where we can do a home energy assessment. We can send out one of our contractors to do a home energy assessment.
Which I have done, and it's painless and informative and great.
It only costs $99, and it's typically about a $300 value if you were to contract with somebody else to provide the same services. They come and they do a complete assessment of your home's energy use, give you a report, and help you decide which of our incentives might be ideal to take advantage of. And some of those incentives, just so customers know, we have up to $900 off if you install an Energy Star rated air conditioner or heat pump.
Say that, $900. That's people care about that.
And not only that, but the savings continues because it's going to save you money on the use of that. In addition to that, we also have duct sealing. A lot of our contractors have started to do a form of duct sealing that's called aerosol duct sealing.
Okay.
And this was developed by the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratories. You know, there were some pretty smart scientists putting together this system. And what they can come in and do is essentially hook a machine up to your duct system and spray a sealant in. And this is a non-toxic sealant that they spray, or it's inert when it's installed, that will then seal up cracks, for example, in your metal ductwork. All metal ductwork is formed by taking two L-shaped pieces and joining them on the edges with a fold to make a seam. That seam has leakage that runs down the length as well as each time it's connected. And so often these
and
are
isn't
not...
isn't that where a lot of the energy loss occurs, is in the ductwork? And
yes.
People don't know that. It's not anything I think about. It's not anything I see.
In fact, Energy Star did a study, and they found about 20% leakage in most... in the average home's ductwork. So they can test that, let you know if it is leaky. And if it's leaky, there's up to a $600, $650 incentive for that air sealing. So
it really makes a huge difference. So there's way to save money. And I like to talk about that as the triple bottom line. There are reasons why people should
yes.
start looking at this. And it's not just about the environment. It's about green for your pocketbook, as we say back east.
Absolutely. And one thing I've got to mention, because so many people are putting in solar now, talk to your solar installer if you're thinking about doing solar, and ask them if you might want to do an energy efficiency retrofit first, because so often they can reduce the size of the system they need to install.
Right.
By making sure that your home is energy efficient first. So we want to make sure the home is energy efficient first. And then once we've maximized the energy efficiency by reducing leakage and putting in energy efficient equipment, then you actually need less solar. Now, if you've already installed solar, you don't need to give up, because you could still see the amount of energy you have
energy
to purchase
savings.
Aftermarket come down dramatically through going ahead and making sure you do the retrofit.
There are so many things that to look at. Okay, so what else do you want to share with us about incentives?
In addition to the air conditioner incentives and heat pump incentives that we have, that I mentioned, we're up to $900. We have the $650 off our duct ceiling. If you do an air conditioner replacement and duct ceiling, you can get up to $1,700 off of that, because there's also another $150 available in instances where we're able to downsize the unit by a half ton or more. And
that's a big number.
It is.
In anybody's yearly budget. I mean, if you go monthly, that's a big number.
Traditionally, ducts were sized larger for swamp coolers than they need to be for an air conditioner. So
okay.
A lot of homes that started out with ductwork size for a swamp cooler, potentially have larger units on than they need. And in addition, just standard practice 10 years ago was putting on larger units. So now we run a more sophisticated calculation called a manual J calculation, which all of our contractors run. And that calculation allows them to accurately size the equipment. And most customers don't know, but you actually want to have the proper size. You don't want to oversize the unit, because if you oversize your unit, it will lead to more rapid cycling, which wears down the unit more quickly, and it creates a system where you're freezing cold 1 minute, and then you warm up again, and then you're freezing cold.
Right, right.
So you want a properly sized unit. It will run a little bit longer, but it will run much more efficiently. It won't cost you more money, and the unit will last much longer.
That's great. Okay, highlight one more for us.
Okay, one more is our insulation, air sealing and insulation. We always want to make sure when contractors put in insulation, they check and make sure there is sealing, a good job of air sealing, and that the insulation is aligned with what we call an air barrier, which is usually the drywall and the ceiling. But there are cases where you'll find it has not been aligned properly. And in those cases, the fiberglass insulation literally acts just like a fiberglass furnace filter. It allows air to pass right through it and doesn't insulate the home. So our contractors check and make sure the home's insulation is properly installed. And if you have less than an R38, they can bring you up to an R38 and offer up to $800, depending on the amount of air sealing that needs to be done and insulation to do that work.
So when people are listening, I have a growing national audience, which makes me really happy. These are things that will apply to any home. It's not just
yes.
a Tucson, Arizona or Southern Arizona.
Absolutely.
It's like your ductwork and how your home is or is not a sealed envelope, whether it's going out the door or coming in under the door with weather stripping.
That is absolutely correct. And if you are not in Tucson, Arizona, I encourage you to go to two places. You can go to Energy Star.
Excellent source for
that
Mrs. Green, I can tell you that.
Yes.
Energy Star, okay.
It'll give you the science behind and the savings you can expect to see, as well as give you direct you to contractors in your area. In addition, look up your local utilities. Many utilities, like Tucson Electric Power, offer these types of programs to their customers now. So I encourage you strongly to look
up. To
go
wherever you are. And that's what, I have touted. You talk about early adopters. I'm proud of my affiliation with Tucson Electric Power, because they're on the cutting edge of everything with their community solar, their solar fields, their involvement in cutting edge research. I think that they want to be a solution to finding alternative energy as fast as we can. What's the best way for people to look up all of these great programs? If they are listening from Tucson, how do they find there's a vast array. There's a lot of content. What's
Absolutely,
the best way?
There is. And the best thing you can do is go to our brand new, newly redesigned website.
It's amazing. It's a great website.
www.tep.com. And you'll see energy efficiency banner across the top, or you can also just do tep.com/efficiency.
Right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank
I hope
you.
You'll stay here with me. And thanks to TEP for supporting Mrs. Green and for all you're doing to really improve the quality of the environment in Southern Arizona. Mike Baruch from Tucson Electric Power. And now we are going to switch over to our featured guest. We are absolutely thrilled to have her here today, Patty Goldman, Vice President of Litigation for Earth Justice. And I did a lot of research on them. I've been familiar with them for many, many years. And their tagline is, because the earth needs a good lawyer. And now that I'm Mrs. Green, it's like, yeah, hats off to that. They're the world's first and largest nonprofit environmental law firm. So, Patty, welcome to Mrs. Green's World, and thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
Well, you have a lot to share, and I think we should get on with the show and talk to our listeners and to me about how did you come to be and how did the earth get a good lawyer? I think that's the best question that we can start with.
Well, we are celebrating our 40th anniversary this year, and so you have to go back. It is. You have to go back to like very late 60s, early 70s, when environmental litigation really didn't exist. It was just starting.
Right.
At that time, the Sierra Club would have lawyers who worked for law firms volunteer to bring a case for them and another case. And some of those lawyers were finding that their law firms were wondering about how much of this work they were going to do for free for the Sierra Club.
Right.
And then they thought, wouldn't it be a great idea to set up an organization that would have people that specialized in environmental law, and they would be available to represent Sierra Club and other organizations for free so that people could go to court to protect the environment, to enforce our environmental laws. So our very first case was a case that was challenging a huge Walt Disney development that was proposed for the Sierra Nevada.
I did. Mineral King Valley.
Mineral King Valley. And it would have really fundamentally changed, destroyed that valley and all that it sustains. So we went to court, and all the way up through the Supreme Court, the question was, did we even have the right to be in court? And the Supreme Court established that citizens could go to court to protect environmental values, to protect their use of the environment, not just economic harms or personal injuries. So that was a fundamental change in both being able to go to court. That case was started by the volunteer lawyers but finished once we were an organization. And it spawned, not only our organization, but the whole ability of people to protect their environment and enforce environmental laws.
And I have to tell you that in doing the research, it's I either get excited or sometimes it's daunting to me. And one of the lines in the writing on the website said, you know, a passion for preserving the environment, and this line to me is one that I will hold on to, trust in the power of justice. It's one of your core values, and at times when you're going up against major, you know, oil companies and oil spills, I really do worry about the little guy and how can we, it's daunting to me about, you know, the big money that you're going up against. So I want to repeat, no cost to the clients. You've represented over 1,000, not just big ones that everybody would recognize, you know, like the NRDC, the National Resources Defense Council, and the Audubon Society, but Friends of the Everglade. So can we try to narrow it down to your three strategic areas maybe and talk about each one of those? Because you do have three kind of core areas that you focus on.
Sure, I'd love that. I have to say I'm thrilled that you seized on our passion for justice, and I firmly believe in our organization, firmly believes that you can get a fair shake in the courts when in the political process with all the money that's being thrown into elections and into lobbying, you know, often the truth does not prevail, evidence is irrelevant, and the decision makers aren't neutral. And in the courts, though, we live in a country in the rule of law. The civil rights movement gained justice in the courts. So does the environment, and that's what we stand for.
And it's so clear, truth, justice, and the American way. I mean, there's a lot of power in that statement. And I talked to you earlier today, and I said, sometimes at the end of the day, I go to bed saying, okay, I've got to get up tomorrow because I'm a spokesperson for Mother Earth. And it is at times daunting. So Earth Justice gives me a lot of hope. So clean energy, that's one of your major buckets, as you call it. Talk about maybe one or two cases or what your focus is right now that's on the radar.
Well, sure. Of course, we want clean energy, but a lot of what we do is fight dirty energy. So let me start there.
It's got to start somewhere.
Right, and there's no energy sources dirtier than coal plants. So we, along with many others in the community, have been trying to force coal plants to either clean up or shut down. So let me give you a couple of examples. One is the case that went to the Supreme Court, and in 2005, the court decided that greenhouse gas pollution is, in fact, a pollution that must be regulated under the Clean Air Act. In those years, the Bush administration was saying this was 2007, this wasn't a pollution, this wasn't the type of pollution that was meant to be covered by the Act. So that has set into play a whole series of actions to regulate greenhouse gases from automobiles, and now new coal plants must have greenhouse gas regulation. Refineries are starting to come into the fold. So that's one type of regulation that's now new because of this precedent-setting case. Another one, though, is a very old kind of pollution, which is mercury emissions from coal plants. And coal plants are the number one source of mercury pollution in this country. We have fish advisories in all of our states saying that the fish are contaminated, people shouldn't eat them, and the number one culprit is coal plants. So we've been fighting for years to get effective regulation. And when I say years, I mean more than a decade.
Right.
A lot of these battles take well over a decade.
Right.
So we were trying to get the regulations in the first place. And then when the Clinton administration put them in, they were undone by the Bush administration. And we challenged that rollback and won in the Court of Appeals. Then we had to do another lawsuit to compel the EPA to act. And finally now, we have mercury controls on coal plants for the first time, even though they should have been there like almost two decades ago. And that's forcing coal plants around the country to either retrofit and clean up or shut down. And that's having a huge effect on our greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuels.
And one of the things that I appreciate as a consumer, because my audience is the consumer, get you to think, not tell you what to think, is you talk about people loving their fish, okay? It's about that and their health. And I read a lot about the mercury pollution, and it brings it right home into my house when you talk about the huge mission and the power of justice for not just the environment, but for me as a person that might want to have fish for dinner. So it's like, yeah, bring it right down from the huge macro level and the implications to the micro level, which is the consumer, and that can make a difference. So it's like, that's an unbelievable one. What about other areas? I know that you have worked on, everybody in their home has a refrigerator and, well, most people, let's just assume that, and the energy efficiency of appliances. I mean, I have Mike sitting here, and they are huge supporters of Energy Star rating and the upgrades that are happening. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So the flip side of dirty fossil fuels is, can we reduce demand? Can we conserve?
Right.
And a number of ways to do that is through energy efficiency in homes, in buildings, in the appliances that we use. So we've been working on that front as well. And so to take the appliances, I learned about gigawatts when we started getting involved in energy efficiency. You know, something
that's
a little bit mind-boggling.
What is a gigawatt? Right.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about humongous amounts of energy. But we can save those by changing the appliances we use and making them more energy efficient. So many of the different rules, a single rule for, say, fluorescent lamps or residential furnaces or air conditioning equipment, heat pumps, refrigeration equipment, a single rule often is eliminating the need for many coal plants which is just mind-boggling what we can save, and it's just such a huge step forward. So we're involved with the Department of Energy when they are setting the standards. These are very technical issues. So we bring in the technical experts, and we bring in the legal arguments to convince them, cajole them to having really effective standards. And when we succeed, then we are there usually defending against lawsuits that are brought by segments of the industry. Unfortunately, most of these are challenged by the industry. Or if the
okay,
rules
we have
don't
to, Patty, we have to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Mrs. Sure. Green's World Radio Network, Patty Goldman from Earth Justice. Lots more interesting information to share. Please stay here with me.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona, big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
This is Mrs. Green with some great news about the Honda 2012 CR-V. It was named one of the top 10 cars with the best resale value by Kelley Blue Book, and it was recognized as the country's greenest automaker by the Union of Concerned Scientists for the fifth time in a row. If you're looking for a car with great mileage for its class and a bold new look, please visit Chapman Honda at 4600 East 22nd Street. You'll get the best ownership experience possible.
You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives?
Well, it's true.
It's true.
Well, it's true.
Goodwill.
Goodwill gave my son a chance.
My mom, hope.
My brother, a sense of purpose.
And help my dad find a job.
Goodwill helps thousands of people.
People like us every year.
People like us.
Every year.
Your donations to Goodwill do change lives. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You are indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and I encourage you to just think about that. Great show today. Time is just rolling. We had Mike Baruch from Tucson Electric Power talking about a lot of their energy-saving and money-saving programs. Check them out at TEP.com. And our guest, our featured guest, is Patty Goldman, who's the Vice President of Litigation for Earth Justice. I have to repeat, in case you just tuned in, their tagline is, "Because the Earth needs a good lawyer." My view from 30,000 feet, never more now, never ever before more than now. And they are the world's largest and first nonprofit environmental law firm. And we were talking about, they have three major areas: clean energy, safeguarding our health, and preserving our natural heritage. Patty, thanks so much for what you're sharing already. And is there anything else about the upgrading, the energy efficiency piece before we segue to our health?
Well, one more piece. So once we have rules in place that require energy-efficient appliances, often part of that requirement is a disclosure to the consumers. But what we found in searching, particularly for online retailers, is often they're not disclosing what they're required to disclose. So we've been notifying the non-compliant companies and trying to urge them to come into compliance. There could be enforcement actions brought. some by us or some by the government if they haven't enforced, but we're trying to bring these oversights to their attention to get the disclosures out to the consumer, because without the disclosures to the consumer, when there are a range of products, the disclosure requirements won't mean anything. They won't be able to make a difference and have people make informed choices.
And I don't know, it's a whole nother show. It's like 10 other shows. But to me, as a consumer, I really do want to know what I am not being told. And I think that for the first time, the consumer is there with the access to social media, the transparency. So touche on that one, because I really do think the consumer knowledge is undervalued a lot of times by the big dogs, and it's time for Earth Justice to put a stop to that. And I love it. Continue to put a stop to that. Okay, what about, this is to me what got me interested in the whole idea of a concept for a show, Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Mrs. Green's World, whatever, and now it's happening. But our health, the number one reason why people will make a choice, a greener choice, is for their health. So talk about some of the work you're doing in this area on a you know, the view from 30,000 feet, because it's huge.
Sure. Well, you know, back in the 1970s, one of our first areas that we worked in was air pollution, establishing requirements for polluting facilities to have permits that would rein in the pollution and keep clean air clean. So that's something we've been doing for quite a long time, and it's made a huge difference in a lot of our cities, although we still have a long way to go, particularly on toxic air pollution and smog in certain areas. But aside from that, we also work in areas of pesticides and toxics. So let me start by describing some of the pesticides work. When you look at pesticides, I think there are different ways to view the harms that are caused by them. Some are in the way that they're applied. The workers are the most exposed people.
Absolutely, and positively, and people, right.
And the communities, too, that the kids who live near the fields. And then you can also look at it as the residues of the pesticides that are on our foods,
right,
which often we don't know about and we're exposed to. And not knowing what effects they'll have. So they're both sides of it, both very important. The way pesticides tend to be regulated is one by one. And so what we've often done is go after bad acting pesticides, which tends to both upgrade the health standards,
okay,
and get rid of some of the worst actors. So one cluster of those actors is actually pretty horrific, but there's a whole class that are neurotoxins, and they were originally developed by the Nazis as nerve gases, and they weren't used as such in World War II, but then after the war, chemical companies converted them to commercial use, to agriculture use.
Because they kill and bugs, so, and who cares about the people? It's like, I have to do, like, that comes right to the gut emotional level. Like, really?
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's if, like, really? Okay. Spraying from airplanes. Yeah.
They're nerve toxins, so they affect the nervous system of the bugs, but then of the people that
right.
are nearby, and they cause acute kind of poisoning incidents that are like your worst nightmare kind of flu, but they can get all the way to seizures. Some of them have longer lasting chronic kind of effects, like cancer or developmental effects in kids, and they were on our foods in very high amounts. That now has been improved through years of litigation and then reform of the law and implementation of a new law that was passed in the 90s. So that's actually hopeful. The levels of these pesticides on foods are way down. But the workers are still exposed. And one of the routes of exposure that's particularly pernicious is through drift through the air, which gets not just to the workers in that field or the next field, but a lot of these areas, you have schools and playgrounds and homes right in and around the fields, and the kids are unprotected. And so we're really pushing to get regulation to protect these children from drift and from the impacts that drift causes.
You know, this is something that you think about happening in Central America, not in the United States of America. I mean, I know that the conditions in Central America, for example, with spraying for flowers, is so much more horrific, and I've watched way too many films, read way too much about that. And it is the children, and it is just abominable working conditions. But here in America, I see a little bit of a shift, and flowers is one of my favorite things to talk about, because Valentine's Day is coming up, and people don't understand that if their flowers are sprayed with an insecticide, a pesticide, and an herbicide, that they off-gas. And that, you know, there's a price to pay at the level at which it was grown, and there can be potentially a price to pay if you're having them all over your house. So organic farming for flowers is definitely on the increase in the United States, and that's encouraging. But it just blows me away. So the little kids, and it gets into the water supply. So you're taking that on, and it's huge.
Yeah, it is huge.
What about toxins in the home? I think that it's sometimes we're not aware that we really honestly do live in toxic dumps. And I hate to say that, but it is. It's, you know, there's something to clean this up with. What we're putting on our bodies can have 7 known carcinogens. What we're spraying into the air, like if I go to somebody's house and they're spraying an air freshener, I'm like, get me out of here, because I don't really want to ingest that in my lungs. So can you talk about that and how Earth Justice is involved in toxins in the home and helping the consumer?
Sure. Unfortunately, I have kind of bad news for you, which is we have a very ineffectual federal law that pertains to toxics. It had good intentions in the beginning, but the standard is very cumbersome, and it basically grandfathered in 80,000 chemicals that were already on the market, and new ones coming on have a very cursory review, and we don't have a very stringent health standard. So you cannot assume that toxics that are in the products that are in your home are regulated to be safe for you and your families.
I definitely don't assume that. I don't assume that.
Now, it's very sad. States are stepping in. There's a movement to reform the federal law, probably not going anywhere this Congress, although I think a much stronger bill will be introduced before too long. And then states are stepping in, trying to ban certain chemicals or require disclosures. And so what we've been doing is looking at, first, right to know. Could we get disclosures so consumers can make choices? And one of the most innovative strategies we pursued was in New York State, where there was a law from 1976 requiring the disclosure of ingredients in household cleaners.
Okay.
It was never enforced. You know, this law came in with the whole movement about phosphates and detergents.
Right.
And never enforced, no compliance. No company had ever filed a report with the state as required by the law. So we decided, okay, let's go enforce this law. So we sent notices to companies that were marketing their products in New York, some of the bigger ones, and a couple of them said, okay, well, we'll make some disclosures. Most of them it didn't. We kept on with the case. And then we kept pushing the state to decide to require compliance. And they are now doing that. They have a proposal, and I think this is the year it will be finalized, that will require companies that market their household cleaners in New York State to file reports that will disclose the ingredients, having public disclosure of most of them. There'll be some trade secret kind of claims for the secret formula and that kind of thing. But what is disclosed in New York State will be disclosed throughout the whole country.
And everybody can find it out. I love it. Love it.
Thank you, Internet. Right?
Thank you, Internet. Thank you, transparency. I mean, seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, I went round and round, and since it is my show and my radio network, I went round and round with Shackley and lots of emails, and I'm not asking you to comment on that, but I said, if your products are so pure and so safe and so environmentally friendly, why won't you tell me the ingredients? Because, and they, of course, use the proprietary information. Someone will steal our formula. I had volumes of paperwork about their unsatisfactory answers. And the other little bit I want to put in here from the consumer point of view, it's almost ridiculous. In our house, we have just gone back to a lot of basics, because we were Windex, Clorox, and Pine Sol. And I used to love it and come home and smell all those great things. I admit it. I associate it with cleanliness. Now I kind of, it makes me sick. But vinegar and baking soda and all of those things, hydrogen peroxide, it's so much less expensive, so much every bit as effective. My mother used to clean the windows with vinegar and water, and now we do. It works. You don't need a spray bottle and toxins, and, you know, the beat goes on. So it's been the evolution of me, the consumer, for toxins in my house, and now those smells, you desensitize, and then you get sensitive again to realizing this just doesn't smell right. It smells like an anti-disinfectant, and I don't like it in my house.
Oh, and I think a lot of people are doing the same thing, and they want the information about what kinds of products they should stay away from, and then where are the alternatives. You know, another thing that we did, we discovered that under the federal law, companies have to file any information they get about adverse effects of their chemicals with the Environmental Protection Agency. And they were doing that, so you'd find out, like in a laboratory study, the mice died, or you'd find out there was some spill and then it caused a fish kill, or people got rashes or respiratory problems. But they would black out the name of the chemical. So you know,
this isn't good for me, but I don't know why, right?
So we started to say, wait a minute, this you have to make this available under the Freedom of Information Act, and there's a limited exemption for trade secrets, but real trade secrets. Again, like the formula, the recipe for the product, the thing that is uniquely theirs, not the chemicals.
Right.
And EPA is now starting to require that these documents be refiled with the name of the chemical disclosed, so that then again the public will know and get this information. What did happen in that study from what chemical?
So I've got to ask you this. Does it ever happen, because these companies are getting outed all the time for what I call it's worse than greenwashing. It's misinformation. It's false advertising. And if you pick up the tab on the ingredients and look under it, there are more ingredients that they just want to hide a little bit. Literally, there are consumer products that I've done my research on where there's more ingredients on the little tab underneath the top ingredients. Do you ever come across a company that you could name or not name, where you really believe they are committed to the greater good and they want to have environmentally safe products and they want to work with you and just get there, and it's going to take time? I mean, is there, I trust in the power of justice, but give me some hope.
You know, I'm not sure, because we usually are focusing on where the system isn't working to try to make it work.
Okay.
So I'm not sure where that is the case. You know, I think that you're right, though, in the secret ingredients to be really concerned. You know, often it's the fragrance, which is the plasticizers that cause harm in, you know, cosmetics.
And the dye, This
the
color
dye
does not occur in nature. And I'm like, this is gorgeous turquoise, but why am I putting it on my head? You know,
and with pesticides, like the products you might buy from a store that are pesticides, and some of those are disinfectants as well, they'll be inert ingredients. And that doesn't mean they're not harmful. It means that the active ingredient on killing the germs or the insect is one chemical, and they'll disclose that. The inerts could be pesticides in another product. And many of the inerts are on hazardous toxin lists, but they're not disclosed. And we've been working along with states for quite a while to try to get these hazardous ingredients in pesticides disclosed, so that when you're buying those kinds of products in the grocery store or the home improvement store, that you will have that information. Am I putting benzene in my house? Something like that.
And, you know, I have not ever... I cried on the show twice. It's not really good for a radio talk show host to cry on the show. One was talking about Gabby Giffords. It's still, you know, near and dear to my heart. She's a wonderful human being, and it was a very sad day for the world. And we've done a lot to come around. The other time was I believe it was Lisa Frack from the Environmental Working Group on, and she told a story about a huge activist in Florida whose little baby was crawling around the house and literally developed a condition that killed the baby, and it was from disinfectants in the home. I mean, I know that's the rare case. Now, needless to say, this mother has become a huge activist for being careful, but it is that extreme. I mean, it literally can kill your children, certainly your pets, cause all kinds of upper respiratory things in us, cancer, who knows. So it's something we really have to pay attention to. It's part of my passion for being Mrs. Green. It's not good. It's really not good. Okay, we are going to, we actually have, we're going to go to break in a minute. And what I'd like to talk about when we come back, I have a lot more questions, but you've also done a lot in the area of preserving our natural heritage. It's another issue that's near and dear to my heart. And we'll talk a little bit about that. If you just tuned in, we are interviewing Patty Goldman, who's the Vice President of Litigation for Earth Justice, because the earth needs a good lawyer. You can tell I get a thrill out of saying that. And they are the world's first and largest nonprofit environmental law firm. And Patty, just do a shout out right now for your website, and we'll do it again before the end of the show.
Sure. Our Earth Justice website is at earthjustice.org.
Earthjustice.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Please stay here with us.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best in class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand new sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Thanks to Mike Baruch for being on the show earlier from Tucson Electric Power. And special thanks, Patty Goldman, Vice President of Litigation for Earth Justice, because the earth needs a good lawyer. And they are the world's largest, first and largest nonprofit environmental law firm. I am so pleased to have you on the show, and there's a lot more to cover, and I have a couple of questions for the end. So let's talk about your first bucket, as you call it, was clean energy and what you're doing to safeguard our air and things that the consumer can be aware of to protect them, safeguarding our health with a focus on pesticides and toxins in the home, and then preserving our natural heritage. And I was talking off air with Mike. You know, these are things that the average consumer, which would be me, I'm not constantly reading about preserving our natural heritage. And to have the preservation of the environment group like you and trusting in the power of justice, it makes me sleep better. So let's talk a little bit about that area that you focus on.
Sure. Well, that was the beginnings of Earth Justice, were protecting places like the Sierra Nevada, or the Tongass National Forest in Alaska, the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, the Everglades. And we are very committed in our various regional offices to protecting some of the crown jewels of this nation. And the threats are varied. So right now, one of the biggest threats that we're facing, and I mean right now, this winter and spring, as we speak, is the rush to drill up in the Arctic Ocean. And this is the off coast of Alaska and America's Arctic waters. And here we have a wilderness, really an ocean wilderness, a very unexplored frontier wild place that supports polar bears and walrus and used to be very inaccessible because of sea ice, but now with climate change becoming more accessible. And it is believed that there are oil reserves there. There's a rush to drill. It started with huge leases that were awarded, and one of them is like a 30 million acre lease approved in the Bush years. I mean, huge. And then the sales are like 2 million or 2.5 million acres, just huge areas that then the oil companies can explore. And this is very industrial development kinds of activities then, even at the exploration stage. If you'll remember, the Deepwater Horizon was an exploration rig. It was not full development.
Right.
That is the riskiest stage. It's when we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know. They haven't mapped out and really studied the oil that they're tapping. And you can get those kicks. You can get things that do cause explosions, that do cause these kinds of spills. So right now, we are on track. All sorts of permits have been issued for exploration drilling in both the Beaufort and the Chukchi Seas. That's pretty much the waters off the entire northern part of Alaska. And they're planning to go explore this summer. We're challenging those exploration permits and various air permits. But the thing that just if I could bring home what the real problem here is, we don't know how to clean up an oil spill in the Arctic. We just don't know. Look how long it took in the Gulf. Where
it's
you
still
have
a major big time going on. I mean, there's still...
I mean, that was just to stop it from... to stop the gushing, you know. Yep. It took months. And that's where you've got a whole infrastructure. You've got incredible development. It's very close to developed areas. But up in the Arctic, you've got like 1,000 miles till you get to the Coast Guard station. And it's a little different in sea ice. If any expert you will ask will say, we don't know how to clean up an oil spill on sea ice. The booming and the burning, the things that they did in the Gulf, they don't work on sea ice.
Right, right. I mean, it does absolutely and positively take my breath away. It's a really deep dark hole that I don't even want to go down. And just a little sidebar on the Everglades, you talked about that, and I had three scientists. Actually, two show on the show about the cleanup in the Gulf and the monitoring. They're the Gulf Monitoring Consortium, and I went back and listened to the show because I wanted to make sure I got the figures right. One football field a minute is being destroyed in the Everglades, and it was a minute. And I went back and listened to the show specifically and heard these two scientists talk about it. And the reason it's being destroyed, it's all related to the oil industry, whether it's the transportation or the underground pipelines or whatever, it's one football field. So those numbers are staggering. So back to Alaska, which, you know, it's a perfect segue. It's a very sad segue.
It is. So we've been successful over the last 5 years in stopping the drilling from happening. There are now some studies underway to learn more about this area, to learn which of the humongous areas that are under leases in the Chukchi Sea, for example, are of critical importance to polar bears or bowhead whales or walruses before we start with the full-scale development there. Unfortunately, these leases were already awarded, and there's this push, both the Department of Interior, to give these permits to allow Shell Oil to be starting up this summer. And we'll work on it. If the drilling does start, we will keep trying to keep us safe. But it's not the right place and not the right time to start this kind of development.
And it's my whirling dervishness has been greatly under control for this show, but it's one of the questions that I wrote down that I wanted to ask you is just that you are taking on a lot of big corporate giants and big money and deep pockets, and you're winning. How is it sheer? I mean, some of the videos you have on your site, you know, one of your, he might have been one of your founders, said, well, we just got mad. And I love that. I just get mad. So what is your, you know, the strategy in this particular case, the polar bears in Alaska and the last frontier and the wilderness that we don't get to ever have again? What is, do you have a lot of hope talking around the office after 5 o'clock?
Well, I'll tell you, on the Arctic, I don't think we believed, if you go back 3 years ago, I don't know that we thought we were going to change people's minds who'd issued these permits who were moving forward, and then right. We won in court. And we keep pushing to convince the decision makers to slow down. What I would encourage people to do is be heard, is to let the Interior Department know, let the Obama administration know, that you don't want this drilling to happen until we know more about this area, where drilling should occur, and we know how to clean up an oil spill and have that infrastructure in place. They actually approved these permits for the drilling before they even have oil spill plans. These are the plans that the companies have to have to figure out how to contain the spill. They don't even have those. They said, we'll approve the drilling contingent on those plans being in place, but how do they even know if they'll be good enough? They have to review them with an open mind just to make sure they're good enough, but they already gave Shell a clean pass to say, go ahead and drill. I think people should let the government know, this is not what we want you to do with our resources. We do not want to have a deep water horizon up in the pristine Arctic Ocean.
And I can't emphasize that enough. And what surprises me, what has continually surprised me, knowing some of the political, the people in office, they really do listen to their constituency. If they get 20 emails or 20 phone calls or 20 letters, it's not like it takes 200,000 people. Start it in your area if you're listening. Google it. This is where the internet is such a gift to us. Contact Earth Justice and say, where's the best way? Where can I put my energy that's going to have the most impact? Contact Mrs. Green. I'll find out for you. But it's like, let's have us not be sheeple. Let's have us be people that are thinking and realizing that it's a sealed envelope. The earth is a sealed envelope, and it does really matter what's going on up there. It's one of my favorite places in the world, and it makes me sick. Like, literally, it makes me sick.
I love that expression, the sheeple. I people can make a difference. I mean,
so
I think that's
easily.
What we give people voice by representing them in court, to stop illegal behavior, to enforce our laws, to force the decision makers to listen. But when the decision makers then have to listen and have to rethink their decisions, they need to hear from people across the country saying, we don't want you to make this choice that's going to adversely affect our environment or our health.
And I say it over and over and over again on the show. It's not a political issue. It's about the earth. And the earth doesn't vote, doesn't know Democrat from Republican, from Libertarian, from Green Party. It's the earth. And let's keep it out of the political discussion, other than getting our politicians that we put there, that we pay, we elect, to pay attention to the environmental issues that will, in fact, impact us all. It's so not hard. And I'm putting stuff on Facebook on my Mrs. Greenside constantly. Just sign this. It took me 3 seconds today to do one about genetically modified foods. And there again, the petition was, just tell me what's in my food. And that if I want to eat it, fine. But if I don't know what's in it, I don't get to make a choice. And that's it. It's like the GMO conversation can go on for decades as well. But I want to know what you put in there. So I'm looking at it just like I am for calories and fat content. It's so doable. And I put it up. Take 10 seconds is about what it took me. So that's a good one. I want to ask you, it's not personal, it's professionally, because you do have a view from 30,000 feet. Do you think there's a single issue that people should focus on if they say, I just want to pick one, and this is the biggest one that I think is facing the U.S. today, or is it really an integrated challenge of multiple dimensions?
Oh, I have a hard time saying what the one issue is because
I'm glad,
there's so many,
I do
and
too.
It is very, yeah, it's very personal. I think. I mean, I think that there, whatever it is, I think it's important to be active and be heard. and to figure out what is the smartest way to be heard. And by smartest, I mean, you know, the right decision maker, and how to counter the other side's views so that you will have an effect. You will have influence.
And I think it's to me, there's so much, what was Occupy Wall Street? What is it? What is Occupy Oakland? There is no one answer. And I put on Facebook last night, after one of those days of lots of research, how about we just have an Occupy Earth movement and everybody can keep their day jobs and let's get on board with Occupy Earth. It's so, you know, it's funny and it's not, because it's just living consciously. And one of the points is, you know, women, mothers, got the huge milk producers to stop putting growth hormones in milk, and thus organic milk came to be. So people can organize around an issue and have the big corporate giants change what they're doing. I think that's hope. Talk about, you have to have, how do you get your support for doing all the incredible things you do and taking on the big dogs that are well-funded? What are your funding mechanisms?
Well, Earth Justice does not take any money from government or corporations.
Right, which is great.
Yeah, we can't, because those are the people that we right. are suing to try to get them to comply with the law.
Right.
So our funds come almost entirely from individuals and foundations who contribute to our cause. And people give money to Earth Justice so that we can provide legal services free to environmental groups, health groups, fishing groups, hunting groups, all sorts of interests that really want our environmental laws enforced to protect the planet, to protect our health. We are always working in partnership with others. Those are our clients, the people that we represent in court. So we're a service that gives value added to all sorts of other groups that you and your listeners may support as well.
And I think another, you know, to end up on a really positive note, one place where it really worked under the, you know, preserving our natural heritage is Yellowstone. I mean, this is to me irrefutable. It's not a political opinion. I mean, it was a big battle there. And you, I believe, were very much involved in that. And it has been restored. I love to watch PBS specials on Yellowstone and what a success it is. So can you talk a little bit about that before we have, like, I think we have about 4 minutes left.
Sure. So, I mean, Yellowstone is an area, we have an office that's in Bozeman that's really committed to protecting Yellowstone and the ecosystem around it. It is true wild areas. I mean, a huge ecosystem that sustains grizzly bears and wolves and elk and bison, and it's unparalleled really in the lower 48. So we challenged a mine. There was going to be a huge gold and silver mine just 3 miles outside of Yellowstone, and it would have polluted three tributaries to the Yellowstone River. We pursued a very innovative strategy where we sued Naranda, which was the company that was going to do this new mine. We sued them to clean up pollution from mines that had been abandoned and that had caused essentially Superfund sites, huge cyanide contamination. Okay. We had to pierce the corporate veil to show that Naranda was, in fact, connected with these other companies. And when we succeeded, they were liable for polluting without a permit, which was up to hundreds of millions of dollars that they would have had to pay. And then that led to a buyout of those mining rights so that that mine will never happen. That was a huge victory, and it also led to cleanup of those other the cyanide pollution from the other mines. We've also been working to protect the wildlife, the elk, the bison, the grizzly bears. We just had a success this November that kept the grizzly bears on the endangered species list because of the threats to their survival, but also some of their food supply is succumbing to climate change, the white park pine needles they eat. That's been a huge victory.
And you're also preserving, you can't drive everywhere in Yellowstone. There are truly protected areas that you hike in, that roads are not going to upset the natural balance, the unbelievable preserved habitats. And it's just, there's just no downside to Earth Justice. And I don't want to sound corny at all, but it gives me hope for the planet. So we are going to be wrapping up, and I am so absolutely pleased that you came on the show. Patty Goldman, the Vice President of Litigation for Earth Justice. Mike, thank you for being in the studio with us and being a part of Mrs. Green's World. And Patty, earthjustice.org is the way that people can find you, and I hope that they do reach out and do just that, and I hope we stay connected.
Oh, I hope so, too.
Thanks for what you're doing for the planet. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Next week, Green Corps, the green version of the Peace Corps. Please stay here with me. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com, and you can get a podcast of this within about a couple of hours. Patty, thank you. Make it a great green week, everybody.